Hey guys, this is Misty with the Anti-Marketing Podcast, and today I am here with Jonathan Melvin as my co-host, and we are going to talk to Angela from All Hands Pottery. All Hands Pottery is an awesome pottery studio located in Norfolk, but I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to kind of let Angela talk about it.
Okay, what do you want to know?
I want to know why you started All Hands Pottery. It's my favorite story.
Okay. I went to school. I think my last graded art class was sixth grade. I didn't grow up thinking I wanted to be an artist or a potter or have anything like that even in any part of my brain. I went through school and I went in the Navy, and I was in the Navy for 26 years. Hmm. If you know anything about the Navy, you know there's no art that happens there.
Yeah.
It's not what it's there for. In 2010, I was sent on my fourth trip to Iraq. And it wasn't a great trip. And not that any trip to Iraq is fantastic. It was a particularly not great trip, for me especially. And when I came back from that trip, I was at the lowest point emotionally, mentally, physically that I've ever been in. Even now, looking back 10 years later, it was the lowest point in my life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really know how to get out of it, but I knew I didn't want to stay there. So one of the first things that I chose to try was if I ever said the words, I've always wanted to do that, always wanted to go there, I've always wanted to try, whatever, then it became a promise and not a wish.
Mm.
I came back in October. In December, I was at a Christmas craft fair, and there was this guy who was doing a demo in front of his booth on a pottery wheel. And I was watching him, and I'm like, that is so cool. I have always wanted to do that. And that was like my first thing. You know, I expected, like, I was had this grand idea in my head that when I made this thing that I was going to always do what I said I wanted to try, that it was going to be like, I'm going to run a half marathon in Iceland around a volcano or something, you know. But it was just something small, and it was taking a pottery class. So in January, I was in my first class, and it completely changed everything for me. I mean, everything. I actually started dating my husband the same month I started pottery.
Hmm.
I don't think I knew that part.
Yeah, it was definitely a crossroads point for me. I took the class, and I am a perfectionist, and I'm also an alpha type personality. So when I do something, number one, and this probably is, you know, arrogant or whatever, but I expect to be good at it. I just tend to be good at things that I try. And I'm also competitive. Like, if it's not a competition, you're losing. Or if you don't think it's a competition, you're losing. And I went into that first pottery class, and I had all this pressure on me to, you know, I put all this pressure on me to do well, and I didn't. It was really hard. It wasn't what I expected at all. I expected it. I mean, you see people who've done this for years. It looks like magic. They just, like, throw clay in, and then they just, there it is. There's a piece of pottery. But it's not like that at all. It's so much about your body and everything to do with your body that it's not easy. And I was devastated that I wasn't good at it. And the thing, though, is I tried, and I listened to the teacher, and I did my best. And I walked out of there, and it was such a weird feeling because I wasn't good at it, but I liked it. And trying to get those two things to work together, it was really strange. It was really strange for me because, you know, you just grow up and everybody tells you to focus on the things that you're good at, not that the things that you like to do, you know? And so it was really hard for me getting that right in my head. And I, like I said, I'm competitive. So the clay wasn't going to beat me, you know? So I showed up to the next class, and I might have been minusculely better. But, you know, I walked out and I still felt good. And I felt good for longer. And what it was, after this is 10 years looking back at this, you know, what it was is when you sit down in front of the pottery wheel, you've got to know where your feet are, and not just your feet, your toes and your heels. You got to know where your knees are. You got to know what your elbows are doing. You got to know what your hands are doing, and not just your hands, your fingertips, your palms, and your wrists. You got to know where your shoulders are pointed. You got to know what you're looking at. And then in your head, you got to be going, step one is this. Step two is that. Does this feel right? Am I going too fast? Am I going too slow? You know, what's the next step? And you've got all of these things going on. There's no room for anything else up here. Nothing.
Mm.
So you push all of those crazy thoughts back out of your head, and it gives your mind, your body, your soul just time to relax. And I really credit the pottery wheel for healing what was broken inside of me. I'm a different person because I do pottery. I'm much more, much less, I think much less afraid of failure. Because when you do pottery, you can fail at any point. You can fail when you're throwing it. It can fail when it's drying. I mean, and some of these things are nothing on you, nothing you did. You know, it's just one day it's more humid than normal and it doesn't dry as quickly or, you know. So, yeah. I forgot where I'm at.
You hit all the good parts.
I hit all the good parts.
So, one thing that I think is really cool about your story and, you know, full disclosure, clearly I know your entire story, is like that military background and the fact that you were a Navy chief and a female Navy chief, which is not as common.
No.
And that you have found like a way to take those experiences and turn them into something completely different, but also what I would dictate as successful.
I think that there's a couple of things going on there. Number one, having been to war, it changes your priorities and what's important. And I think that some things, that fear of failure that I talked about, I'm not sure if it was a perfectionism or fear of failure or how those two things are intertwined. But why be afraid of pottery flopping over, clay flopping over on the wheel? Nobody's shooting at you. You know, what fails if you fail at the clay, you know? Mm. Does it really make a difference in your life? No. So, you know, I think I'm easier on myself because of that. Because it's not a life-changing, if I don't do this,
yeah.
You know, all these other things are going to fail. And I think on the other hand, being in the Navy and having done the things that I've done, I don't take failure as the answer. Like, if something doesn't work the way I think it's going to work, I'm like, all right, well, what can I learn from that? Mm-hmm. And how can I pivot to do something else? It's not... I'm not going to let the door close. Hmm. You know, if that's not the right way, I'll find another way. There's always a way. It may not look like what I expected it to look like, but I'll get there.
Mm-hmm. How did you go from taking a class and being okay with failure to being like, let me open up my own studio? Like, instead of like doing this thing that I'm like moderately good at.
Yeah, here's this peaceful Zen thing that I've decided I want to do.
Yeah.
Now let's bring money into it.
Right. Now let's make it my livelihood.
Well, the thing is one of the things I did, I'm also a teacher, right? I have a degree in education. Mm. And I love to teach. And that's one of the things that I learned from the Navy is I learned how to teach people of varying ability levels and experience levels and different walks of life and, you know, and try to get it down so that everybody's learning. And I love that. I love that. I mean, there's nothing better to me than being in a classroom full of people and you're teaching them something and you see those light bulbs start going off in front of, over everybody's head. It's just like electric and it's awesome. So you take that part of me and then you take the fact that I really love pottery and I really love what it did for me. I'm not the best potter in the world, but I'm a really good teacher. And I really want other people to find the piece that I found in pottery. Mm-hmm. And pottery isn't something that like a lot of schools have in their art department because it's expensive. You know, a pottery wheel, a good one, costs about $1,400 new. And it's not something you're just going to like, oh, yeah, I'm going to try pottery. I'm going to buy a pottery wheel and a kiln and put it, you know. It's not something many people can do. So I guess you asked me how I got there. It was a long journey. I mean, I started in 2011, and I didn't open the studio until 2018. So I went to Germany. I was stationed in Germany for 3 years. I met a lady there randomly who was a potter. She'd been to school in the United States, and she let me come and work in her studio. And I did that for 3 years. So I got better. Hmm. And I got different teachers and different aspects of and learned a lot. Then when I came back to the United States, I had the opportunity to start teaching, and I taught at the Hermitage Museum for a couple of years, and I'm really grateful for them to give me that start of teaching. And I taught for a couple of years. Meanwhile, I retired from the Navy in 2017. And my friend Anna had the space that I'm in right now. And she had a kids' sewing studio and crafts is what they did there. And I thought that was the coolest thing because she's a retired chief too. And nobody I knew had businesses. It's just not, I had no model for that. I mean, anyway, so I started talking to her and I thought, that's really cool that you started this business. It's, I mean, you know, just jumping off like that, it, to me it seemed, it felt like, or looked like jumping off a cliff because I didn't know anything about LLCs or keeping your books or what taxes, any of that stuff, you know? And so I'd ask her these questions and it was just not the cool part of being a business owner. I was asking her about the stuff that nobody likes to do, like your books and your, you know, how to do your taxes and what, all that stuff.
So,
yeah, that's no fun. But anyway, I just kept talking to her about it and asked her those questions. And eventually her business partner, PCS, she got orders out of the area. And Anna's business model didn't allow for her to be in that space by herself. She just came to me one day and said, you ever thought about opening your own studio? I was like, oh, I've always wanted to do that. So I started it. And when I started, my goal was to get pottery to pay for itself. That was my whole goal. It was just to, I had four pottery wheels, and a table and a kiln, and that's it. And I thought that I would just, you know, teach some private lessons and maybe, you know, some of my friends would want to come and learn pottery and do parties or something. And I put out my shingle on Facebook and things went bananas. I mean, I had people calling me and signing up and classes were selling out and it was just crazy. And I didn't expect it, but it happened. And so I just sort of went with it. I'm still working. I had a 40-hour week job on base, which was, on the face of it, fantastic. You know, there's no duty, no deploying. You know, I'm still with my people, you know. Mm-hmm. And I liked the job. I really did. But then I was spending so much time at the studio. I was working that 40-hour week job and then like 40 to 60 hours a week at the studio. And I was, you know, my husband, he sat me down. He's like, look, you know, you're supposed to be retired. And you're working like you work on deployment.
Yeah.
And he was right. And I was starting to burn myself out. And he's like, look, I don't care which one you choose, but please just choose one of them.
Yeah.
And so I quit my job. It was hard. It was really hard quitting my job, but I did it. And now I'm a full-time potter studio owner.
And you still sell out, like, all your classes?
Yeah.
Like, months in advance.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy, right? Like, you think about that.
Yeah.
She's got 10 wheels now?
Oh no, I've got 25 wheels now.
But like in a class. Though.
In a class. I've got I because of COVID, I'm down to eight
okay.
wheels in a class plus me. So, but before COVID, I had 12 people in a class. So.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's nuts. Like and I've been there plenty of times and seen it's all different people, right? It's like the people who want to just try it once and may never come back. They just want the experience. And then it's the people who, like you, I think, that, like, tried and failed and came back and tried again. She has a whole class called Throw It Till You Wreck It. And you basically, like, make stuff and then you break it so you can see what you did wrong.
Whoa.
Because if you put those limits on yourself,
yeah.
you don't know what you can do.
I like that.
So I have them throw it until it falls apart. Because the best pieces in pottery take everything right to the edge. Right,
yeah.
right to the edge. They do everything that clay can do. But the people who start out, they don't know where that edge is until they go over
yeah.
it. So, like in my try it class is like kind of a surprise. So anybody that listens to the podcast and then shows up to my class, it won't be a surprise for them. But the very first pot everybody throws, I make them cut it in half, just because you know I feel like one of the things that I know from training. Right, is you learn more from failure than you ever will from success.
Absolutely.
And the thing about pottery is you've got the skills to do it again. If you did it once,
yeah.
you can do it again. And in fact, the next time, it's probably going to be better. So I have everybody throw it until they wreck it. I tell them to make it as tall as they can and then make it taller. You know, and that way they take it all the
yeah.
way to the edge.
It's cool. And I think it's the concept, right, of saying, you know, you've, failure can sometimes be like more beneficial than success. I think it's interesting that you like started this business without the intent to fully start this business, like, to be, like, where it is, seemingly without fear of failure.
Yeah, well,
unless I'm wrong.
Who's nobody's shooting at me in a pottery studio?
Yeah.
You know, so what happens if I fail? I've already done 26 years in the Navy. That's a success in anybody's book.
Yeah.
If I fail at this, well, then I fail at this, and I'll do something else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, that doesn't define me.
What would you say would make you successful? Like, what dictates success for you, like, in this, like, knowing that you started with the intent to just have pottery pay for itself?
In 20 years, some potter is going to go, you know, I got my start at All Hands Pottery Studio, and it was the coolest place, because there were all these people there that were all supportive, and, you know, I found peace there. That's I'll tell you that. That's what I want.
I like that your answer is not like, and I think I have found this with most people that have been interviewed, is not like a monetary response, right? Like, it's not about, I think we all like come in with this why, and this is why we want to do it, and this is why we want to, whatever.
I never started this because I wanted to be rich or even okay. I wanted the studio to be able to pay for itself, but that's not.
You don't want to lose money.
Yeah, I didn't. My goal was that no money came out of my household budget for pottery. That was what my goal was. And it wasn't, see, I'm in kind of a privileged position as far as that goes, is not to have to worry about money, because I have my Navy retirement, mm-hmm. and I have my husband who's still active duty. And so in that case, I'm super fortunate, and I know that. So I don't have to worry about that studio, whether or not it puts bread on my table. And I'm also able to take whatever money that we do get as profit to put it back into the business to make it better. Mm-hmm. So in that, as far as that goes, I know that not everybody can do that, especially with something that they're passionate about.
What would you say? Oh, I had a question. I need it to come back to me. Oh, what would you say your biggest challenge has been, right? So, you know, it's been 3 years of it, and you're selling out classes a month in advance. So seemingly, right, everything seems wonderful, but obviously challenges come with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, there are different challenges now than there were 3 years ago.
Right.
Part of the challenge now is me not being everywhere. You know, I have to learn to delegate stuff, and I have to be able to trust that studio with other people, because I can't be there all the hours that it's open and still love pottery. I can't. So being able to trust other people with my baby is probably the biggest challenge I've got, and letting it go. Like, if they do something that, not the way I would have done it, you know, but it still got there, being okay with that. That's kind of an everyday challenge.
I feel like that's like a life challenge.
All of this is like a giant, like, I'm like making notes, like, man, this is, everything you're saying is essentially life distilled into pottery, that you learn about yourself and failure, that you don't really know, if you're so afraid of failing, that you never build anything great. It's interesting. I know I was never in the military, but I have a lot of friends that were, that so much of your identity comes from being whatever your job was.
Yep.
That, I heard what you said, but I'm sure there were questions as you were saying, like, hey, I am going to quit the job I've always done to go do this. Like, how did you, who did you talk to? What were those conversations like? Like, did you wrestle with it a lot, or was it?
Okay, well, I had retired completely from the Navy in 2017, right. And it wasn't because I wanted to retire. It was because that they said, okay, well, you've been in for this long and you're at this rank, it's time to go.
Yeah, you're out.
And I was cool with that. You know, I mean, I didn't, if they'd let me stay longer, I would have stayed longer. But I had come to terms with that. I had gotten a job on base working at the Fleet and Family, which is a job where you help people, right? People would come to me that were moving, and, you know, I would help them kind of navigate that process about what they could do, what they couldn't do, and how to make it happen, which I loved, because I loved helping sailors. Loved it when I was active duty, and I feel really fortunate that I was able to do it afterwards. But the thing is I didn't just get to do the help sailors. I also had other parts of that job that I did not love. And being a civilian is very different than wearing a uniform into a space. You know, when you walk in with a uniform, there's parts of that uniform that tell people about you that you don't even have to open your mouth and do. You know, they know by your rank, they know by your rate, they know by what, you know, devices you have on, that, you know, have an idea of who you are. But when you're a civilian, you know, it's not that easy. And I tend to be, you know, from the military, I got that knife hand going, you know, yes, this is the way it's going to be. And a civilian female, being a civilian female, that doesn't fly at all.
Well, it's like you lose, like, that piece of your identity, too, right? Like, you've like, built up these, like, things that you can wear and do. Mm-hmm. You know, I know, like, how much I know about the military. I know from, like, my clients who are military, and that's kind of it. But, like, when you get to walk around with your identity, a piece of your identity on your person at all times, you don't have to as much justify, no, I know what I'm talking about, I know what I'm doing. You don't have to convince anybody. Mm-hmm. You've earned that rank.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that would be challenging.
And it was frustrating. Like, I'm wearing civilian clothes, you know, and I walk in and I'm speaking to other military people who are still active duty and wearing, and them brush me off. And it's like, who do you think you are? You know, don't you know who I am? And the thing is no, they didn't.
Yeah.
You know, and that was really, that was kind of a hard thing. I appreciate that job because it helped me step it back, you know, and not try to force
it that. Made the decision to leave easier.
Yeah, it definitely made the decision to leave easier, but I also think that what I was going to was something better.
Yeah.
I got to be my own boss. I got to make my own decisions. I didn't have to work in that bureaucracy. I mean, that's a big deal.
It is a big deal. I've always said, and, you know, everyone's going to say, like, oh, I have so much support for our military. Obviously, I do. But I have more support for it under the guise of, like, I couldn't do it. Like, I am not, not a rule follower. But, like, I don't respond well to authority. I would not have made it nearly as far as you did, because I would have gotten in trouble when I was the lowest rank.
But the thing is, though, is that the way the military works is not, it's not like expects you to be what you are at 19 at age 30, you know? Yeah. It's with your rank comes certain expectations, and you learn as a leader, as a supervisor, how to work those people. And that's part of what I learned, was being able to communicate with people from vastly different cultures, vastly different experience levels, vastly different education levels, and you change to be successful at your job. You know, if what you want is success, if you know, you have to kind of mutate yourself to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. So tell me then, like, from this point, like, and you know, I mean, this is like a fishing question because I know the answer. Tell me where you go from here, right? So you sell out your classes months in advance.
Mm-hmm.
You're only one person. You have people, we should, like, clarify. She has other people that teach and work for her.
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep growing, or do you keep growing?
I definitely keep growing. I want this place to become more than me. I want it to be its own thing. I want it to be able to exist without me. So I think that where I go is, you know, eventually it's like raising a kid. You know, it's like you start out with a little baby and you have to feed it and be there, and then all of a sudden you start trusting other people with that child. You know, and you're still there to guide, but you don't have to be there every second. You know, you let them go to school and you have babysitters and nannies and whatever else, you know. And then as they grow up and become teenagers, it's really hard to let go, but you let them because they have to in order to learn and grow. And it's the same thing with this business. I feel like I want to get to the point where this thing exists and it's still doing what I put the foundation there to do, which is helping people find some peace and creativity and acceptance. That's what I want for the place, and I want that to happen without me going, this is what you're gonna do.
That's smart. I like it. All right, one last thing, I think, unless Jonathan has something, but one last thing in my brain. Biggest piece of advice you can give someone in general, not necessarily to start a business, not necessarily if you're gonna start pottery, whatever, like, what is your, like, if somebody takes away one thing from you and your story and your business, what do you want it to be?
Don't let fear of failure control you.
I like it. I like that a lot because I know plenty of people who never tried because they were too scared.
And I think that is really sad.
It is sad. It is sad. I have to explain that to my kids all the time. They're like, I'm scared of bees, so I'm not going to go outside. And I'm like, well, you're missing out then.
Mm-hmm.
You're missing out on, like, meeting the kids across the street. And I mean, obviously, like, this is, like, not the same as jumping into a business or whatever. But how much did you miss out on, like, not you specifically, but, like, the collective you, because you were too scared of one small thing that could totally change your life?
If I hadn't taken the leap from quitting that job on base and starting this business, I would not be where I am right now. And I wouldn't even have known I missed out on it.
Hmm.
Isn't that crazy when you think about that?
That is amazing. Do you think you have this code you developed of, or this promise you made yourself that if I ever say to myself, oh, I've always wanted to do that, it's now, well, then I'm going to. Like, I have to. Like, I said it. I've made this pact with myself. Do you feel like the origin of that in your experience, was it a response to, hey, maybe I have been fearful in the past and I never will be again? Or did your experiences uncover, like, no, I really believe this thing and now I see it?
I think it's a couple of things. Being a woman in the military, and especially the job I was in, which was, I was a CB, right, which is a construction, which is very male dominated. And then, so even being a female in the Navy is one thing, but then being a female in a very male dominated rate, I was afraid to fail because I was afraid that failure would affect me for the rest of my career, right? I really was. And I think that controlled me so much that one of the reasons I was really depressed and at that low spot was because of that, because I wasn't being true to myself. I was making these decisions based on what other people would consider failure. And then when I went to Iraq and I came back, it changed my priorities. What was more important, me or in my well-being and my health, or other people perceiving me as a success or a failure? So I think those things sort of both. I think that going to Iraq probably taught me that I need to pay more attention to myself and what I want to do, because I mean, not to get like super dark, I guess, but like if I died over there, right, would I look back at my life and go, yeah, it was successful, but did I love it?
Yeah.
And the answer probably would have been no. I mean, because it was hard in the Navy. It was like a fight every day, you know, trying to be taken seriously, trying to make the next rank, trying to all of those things. It was a fight, and it was hard, and it was stressful. And then when I started paying attention to myself when I came back to Iraq and those things that I wanted to do because I hadn't been allowed to do them, you know, it I think that decision is what changed things in my life, was making that decision. And what led up to it was not being able to make that decision. Does that make sense? Is that clear?
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
that's part of the reason my hair is purple.
Yeah,
it's it can because be. I can.
Yeah,
and why not?
Mm-hmm. I love
you
that.
Know, it's just my hair.
Nope.
I explained my green hair to somebody the same way. Maybe not from like such a, you know, clearly various circumstance, but they're like, "Why is your hair green?" And I was like, "Why not? Because it can be."
Yeah,
it can be. I'm gonna be a professional with green hair. I am. But it is that mindset of like, if I can do it, why won't I do it? What's stopping me from starting my own business? What's stopping me from,
you know,
if it's anything more than yourself, right? Like there's outside circumstances that can stop anybody, you know, startup capital, whatever. Like there are things that can stop you. But if it's only fear.
I don't think those things can stop you. What you just said, the outside capital.
Oh,
I don't
ready.
Think that they can stop you. I don't think if you really, really want to do you'll find a way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's if you let something like that stop you, then you didn't want it enough.
That's a good point. It's true. If you really want it, you'll fight for it.
Mm-hmm. And it may not be like, I think I listened to your podcast or your introduction.
Yeah.
I know you were talking about how like the thought just left me. I had it all
that you
figured
can fail
out
or you can fly.
Yeah, you can fail or you can fly. Yeah. Sorry.
And no, it's fine, but it's true. And so in that podcast, I talked about how somebody told me while I'm crying in my closet about, like, why would I start a business? This was stupid.
That's what it's not a right now. It's not, there's no one word answer for this that's going to change your entire life.
Right.
It's little baby steps that change your life. Mm-hmm. And so if you've got some goal that you want, you know, there's not, like, unless you're basing your plan on winning the lottery, you know, it's not going to be a one thing and then it's done and you're successful. It's going to be a bunch of decisions that you make that turn your ship slowly into that.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. What I was thinking of the podcast. There's no easy answer. There's no one thing that you can get that's going to make you either succeed or fail. It's a bunch of little things.
Yeah, and a lot of people have that preconception that the people that are winning knew exactly how it was going to go. The steps, you know, A through Z, and that's what they did because they already had it figured out. And then the moment you get moving even slightly, you're like, no, we are all building the airplane in flight. And so we can go look at good ideas from other people and we can talk to other people that are doing well. But the reality is, like, all I can see is, you know, that next ridgeline. Like, I can just see as far as I can see and make the best decisions based off what I know. And I have a very simple code that's similar to yours. It's not nearly as profound. But I teach my kids, like, I call it the regret test. That, like, when you're not sure what to do, just ask yourself, like, will I regret doing this or not doing it? And then just based off whatever the answer is, like, that's how you pick what you do. Like, am I going to regret doing this podcast? Probably not. Like, all right, then I'm going to do it. And it's a very, like, I like codes. And I always like seeking out, like, people that's like, yes, this is the code I live by. And that one has served me very well. And it sounds very similar to yours.
There's an adage, I don't know what the right word is, adage, I guess, that no plan survives first contact. And that's, I think, really true in business. It's like, I think it's going to be this way. And then you, like, open the doors and the people come in and it's not.
Yep. But then there's a pandemic. And you're like, oh, okay, sweet. My plan was awesome, but the world ended.
But it's true, right? Like, you start off thinking that you're going to do one thing and then it turns... happened to mine, it happens to you, or happened to your, it happens to so many people. You know, it's gonna be just like this, and this is how it's gonna be. And I remember somebody asked me when I first started, like, oh, are you gonna have like a team of people? You're gonna have like an agency one day. And I was like, no, I'm not. I was like, I don't want that. And then that changed, because it changes as, like, you grow and adapt, and as you realize, like, what the people who pay you want, right? Like, it, in how you can make that work for your original goal and what you wanted, and how those things grow and change. And it's how we pivot, I think, that makes us the most successful in the face of adversity. Is even the wrong word, but just like different circumstances than what we were expecting. Not necessarily bad ones, just different.
And I think that's very similar to what you're saying about, like, the Navy doesn't expect you at 19 to be an admiral.
True.
Our businesses, like, as we get going, like, we become the leader our organization needs. And if you have, like, this clear vision of, like, this thing is serving something bigger than me, I will become the person I have to be for it to do what it needs to do, even though that's not what I thought I was going to do. Like, I thought I was just going to pay for pottery, but turns out this thing serves something more. And that's, it's, you can never, I don't think you could ever pick that.
No.
Like, you can never say, like, oh, this is what it was going to be. Like, and that's that idea when I always see the people that are like, yeah, I've got this business plan. It's exactly how it's going to go. And I'm like, look, a great plan, you have to have it. But it's worth about what the paper it's written on is.
I didn't have a plan. Yeah.
I didn't have a plan either.
4 pottery wheels and that table and that kiln, and I was hoping people would come and want lessons. And that was my plan. Yeah. <That's> From the beginning to the end, that was it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I had said that's all it's going to ever be, then that's where I would still be. I have just allowed myself to, like, open up and go, what could this be?
I love that. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us today.
Anytime.
This is super fantastic.
It's great to get to meet you.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you guys too.
Awesome.